Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapeleg Graylin, along with Tom Luongo. This week, Alex Ovechkin gets his 50th goal, but his celebration pisses off half the hockey world. A hometown discount, it just isn't what it used to be. And with only 10 games left in the season, the question is, who wants those bottom few playoff slots? Sometimes it doesn't seem like anybody wants them. We're counting down the stretch in the season. Stay with us on The Rink.
Well, all hail Alexander Ovechkin, first 50 goal scorer of the season, possibly the only 50 goal scorer. I can't believe there's only 10 games left in the season. Just seems like it's coming to a close really suddenly. But as pretty much predicted, Alexander Ovechkin went a little over the top with his celebration of his 50th goal, dropping his stick onto the ice. And acting like it was just too hot to pick up. Tom, you saw the celebration, didn't you?
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. It's amusing to say the least. You know.
And knowing that the whole thing, really, I'm sure he thought about it before he went out there and did it, and said, "I'm going to do something really dumb just to get the goat of that old goat, grapes, Don Cherry."
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, Ron Wilson, the coach of the Maple Leafs, had something to say about it. He said, piling on, I guess, and saying that, it's one thing if it's, if it's enthusiastic and just, spontaneous, but, the planned, staged goal celebration has no part of the game. I'm not disagreeing with him, but at the same time, you have to think about where this all started in the first place.
Well, he didn't. It's not like he pulled out the cell phone, and tried to call somebody or, like that old, that I don't even remember who the hell
was. Miroslav Shatan saying, "Okay, Darcy, pick up the phone and trade me now." like anybody wanted you. He would have if anybody wanted you.
Well, the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins won him. But still, Don Cherry did, of course, of course all eyes were going to be on Don Cherry, and he had to respond. And it was a pretty lukewarm response. It was pretty much just, "Hey, how do you think that the Tampa Bay Lightning feel about this? And you're a more classy player than that." And, when was the last time I really thought, wow, Don Cherry really cares about class that much in the game?
Considering that his entire shtick is to appeal to some supposedly lowbrow, middle, lower class Canadian working class guy, I don't see how he has any, justification for trying to raise the behavior on the ice. I just don't buy it.
No, I don't buy it either. It's all shtick. And here's how classy was it to not even bother to look up how to pronounce Ted Leonsis's name when he was when they were having their little spick. It's just, come on. It really doesn't play at this point.
The original rant. I remember watching it when he did it on Coach's Corner, it was almost like I walked into the Bizarro world. Like, okay, who let Cherry off of his medication? And I watched him go through this with Ovechkin, and then he showed off. And then Cherry picked a whole bunch of different Canadian boys who don't do this sort of thing. And I'm like, well, you obviously don't watch like Sabres games, because Derek Roy does that stupid one knee slide pump fist sort of thing after every time he scores, and then I'm like, and it's cheesy, and everybody does it. It's not just people of European extraction or ethnicity.
Yeah.
Just take your medication and go back.
He really needs to let go. And, he needs to.
Yeah, he really does.
He doesn't compose very good. I mean, it's picking on him a little bit. But, when he went on about the, here are some guys that don't do that, he couldn't compose a sentence to save his life. It was just, it made, and without any context of watching the week before, you wouldn't have seen it, being even to understand what the heck he was saying. So
And it's funny, because I'll usually defend Grapes, because he's good. He's usually good TV. At the very least, even if he's completely being obnoxious or bigoted or jingoistic or whatever he's doing, he's at least good TV. And I that's the thing about the whole Ovechkin rant that I didn't understand. It wasn't even good television.
No.
You know? And though maybe it's good for ratings or whatever at this point in the season, but it wasn't even good television.
And honestly, I'll tell you, between you and I, when we started this podcast and we talked a little bit about what, you know, good radio for this podcast, and right. that's part of why I didn't really want to, wasn't too concerned about doing quote unquote good radio. I'd rather see Cherry, the media, us, whoever, be genuine and interesting rather than, you know, quote unquote good radio or good television. You know?
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah. But generally he is genuine. And, okay, I find it just I find it like nails on a chalkboard whenever he's doing the whole guy serving over a Canadian boy serving over in Iraq thing, being, you know, fundamentally a libertarian, fundamentally anti-war. It's like nails on a chalkboard. But, you know, it's Don Cherry. It's who he is. So I'm going to give him, you know, I'm going to give him that. I'm just going to go pick up a cup of coffee while he's doing it and then come back and wait for him to start talking about hockey again. Yeah. And that's fine. But, you know, the Ovechkin thing really was kind of the bizarro world thing. I just didn't understand why it was important and why he needed to go off on it when he did. Because of all the guys to pick on, it's Ovechkin. His celebrations are just – he just loves to score goals and play the game. Well, and we need as many players like him in the league as humanly possible.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, really, and also, of course, there's the which superstar do you like better, Ovechkin versus Crosby, which is a lot of fun anyways. But I think for the league in general, I think for fans in general, you know, pick your side and enjoy, you know.
I'm going to go with the same thing as I said last week about Juan Brodeur. Feel privileged that you get a chance to watch these guys play. To me, it's just a false duality thing and a cheap ploy to get people to write things on message boards. I have no stomach for it personally.
Well, you mentioned you know why it even came about. There was an interesting quote. I can't remember who said it at this point. It was a couple of weeks ago when John Tortorella was hired and for the New York Rangers, and of course the prospect of Avery coming around, and just the fact that what is John Tortorella going to do? Well, he's going to coach Avery because that's his job now, and his job was to be on television and say things on television that would be interesting and quote unquote good television. So, you know, and maybe that's all it was Cherry needed something to talk about, and boy, he started a storm.
Yeah, and he's good at that, and maybe that was his gig, and maybe that was simply that was his motivation.
That'd be my guess at this point.
Making sure that
I think that I don't want to get off on a huge finances tangent, but money news in the NHL. The Montreal newspaper La Presse is saying that the Montreal Canadiens owner is quote unquote considering all his options for his assets. The speculation being that he's going to sell the team, of course, because, well, it is the Canadian hockey media, and that's what is most important. Again, just seems like a lot more much ado about nothing at this point.
It's Montreal, so of course everything is much ado about not very much, considering that they're now officially 1 point from being out of the playoff picture in their great centennial year with all of this stuff
The great centennial year where the coach was fired, the quote unquote scandal with the Gostitsyn brothers Russian mob.
Yeah,
benching the captain, their goalie issues, all kind. This is the 100th anniversary, and now, of course, the speculation is that the owner is going to sell the team. Aside from the fact that, as ridiculous as that sounds, first off, who would sell the Montreal Canadiens, and second off, who would buy the Montreal? Who has the money to buy the Montreal Canadiens these days?
Who's going to come up with the financing to buy the Montreal Canadiens, or just come up with the money outright at this point? It's very few people have that kind of ready cash lying around, and we all know that, you know, banks really aren't lending at this point.
No, and who was the last donor of the Montreal Canadiens? Wasn't it Molson?
Yeah.
Yeah, and if Molson can't support them, and now, you know, this guy isn't going to, you know, is thinking about selling. I mean, come on. It just sounds like more people freaking out about a bad, you know, the bad financial situation more than anything else to me.
Yeah, that may be the case, you know. Again, they're 1 point out of the playoffs at this point. And I think that's probably yet another mechanism by which to help distract people from the fact that they actually might not make the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, and probably that's about the only thing that would possibly distract them, because it's ugly. What an ugly situation for their 100th anniversary.
And it's really funny. If you're looking at it right now, the 7th and 8th seeds in both the East and West are populated, like 7 through 10 are populated by teams who don't want to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The
Rangers are the only ones who are starting to look like they actually want to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. 7-3 in their last 10, actually playing good hockey. But other than that, I mean, honestly, the four teams around the bubble spot really don't look like they want to make the playoffs, and the same thing in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
Nashville and Edmonton, you know, maybe they just don't have the horses to get there. Maybe they want to make the playoffs, but they don't quite have the horses. I mean, Edmonton can play well enough to get into overtime, but they can't, you know, close escrow. Anaheim has to do at this point is put together a three game winning streak, and you know they'll probably make it.
Yeah, and they did put together a three game winning streak already to kind of get to that ninth spot, 1 point out. Which, you know, looking at those bubble teams, they and Dallas seem like the only ones that could possibly make some noise. And wow, look at where Dallas is, back to kind of where they were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and Dallas has just lost so many man games injury, which is, you know, now having lost Brad Richards again to a broken hand.
Yeah, he breaks his wrist broke his wrist, came back after missing 15 games, and then breaks his other hand in his first game back.
Yeah, I think he said in the article with Pierre LeBrun on ESPN that maybe it's just payback for not missing a game in 600 or something like that. I was like, wow. He's been on both sides of it. So, but I can't see. I mean, if Dallas is able to put it all together and win, they're just fodder for San Jose or Detroit at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
Anaheim is actually, you know, of the five teams in that range, or maybe the St. Louis Blues, simply because they're playing really well right now, mm-hmm. And they're healthy. That Anaheim's reasonably healthy. St. Louis is reasonably healthy. Edmonton, Nashville, and Minnesota are not impressing anybody. I just don't see Dallas having enough, you know, horses healthy of their top players to make a go at even giving Detroit or San Jose a series. Right. But Anaheim Anaheim definitely could, because they've had the experience. They have two stud defensemen and a goaltender. They can win four games 2-1. And you know, under that scenario. And I haven't watched St. Louis recently, but you know, they have one of the better records in the NHL in the second half of the season, and that's when it counts the most. So,
well, what you said about Anaheim is kind of funny, because that seems like the exact plan that Minnesota always seems to have. You know, one hot goaltender, you know, a defensive system and defensive players, and try and win games 2-1. I mean, that's almost their specialty in a way.
And right.
They're sitting in 10th right on the bubble there.
Well, so, yeah, but Minnesota's game doesn't seem to translate to the playoffs, and maybe it's because they don't have the right players who can handle the pressure of the playoffs and play like that, so they can win or lose 1-0. They're going to constantly, the last two times they've been to the playoffs, they pretty much lose every game, you know, 2-1.
Yeah.
1-0, because they can't score goals, because their offensive players can't handle the pressure.
Well, really, their biggest thing that they love to say about their team is that it was Andrew Brunette who scored the final goal on Patrick Waugh, you know, in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That basically was his, you know, the end of his career. So, but you know, somebody's always going to score a last goal. But that's pretty much what their, you know, what their claim to fame is. Now, as far as claim to fame are concerned, though, Columbus is finally going to break out of theirs, it looks like. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs for the first time,
unless they
absolutely monumentally, you know, screw the pooch. Right now, they're in the playoffs for the first time in their franchise history.
Got to give major props. No, I'm not going to give them I'll give them to Ken Hitchcock in some ways, but I'm going to give it to Scott Housen. This is look at what happens when you replace. Hello, Atlanta. I'm talking to you. When you replace an entirely incompetent GM with a competent one,
mm-hmm.
who goes out and finally puts together the right mix of players with the right coach, and you know, a little fortuitous luck or a little fortuitous drafting development of, you know, consistently always having good goaltending, and look what happens. And you know, It's a 2-year turnaround, basically, for Columbus under Skyhausen. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And they're 10 games over 500. They're solidly a playoff team. And, you know.
They could make a little noise. I mean, if the playoffs started today, they would face Calgary. And I don't really, you know, I mean, Calgary's Calgary. Yeah, they're fine, you know. But I don't think that, you know, I just don't see them going anywhere. I mean, of course, look at how the deck is stacked right now with San Jose and Detroit. Chicago still, you know, still seems dangerous, even though Calgary has one more point than Chicago. Chicago seems really dangerous.
Well, I guess, but they have you know, tremendous offense, and they have everything looks like it's going Chicago's way, but I still don't like the mix in Chicago. I still don't think that they're too many of their key players are too young. I mean, they've got some good veteran presence in the room. They've got guys who've been there before and played well in the playoffs. But I don't know.
Well, just looking at the standings, like purely from
standings. I'm going with Vancouver over Chicago. In a 4-5 series, I'm going with Vancouver.
I don't know. I mean, my big thing right now is that if you look at the top eight, you got four teams from the Central Division in the playoffs right now if they started today. When was the last time that happened? Has that ever happened? Insane.
If St. Louis wins out, it'd be all five of them.
Well, unless you knock down Nashville. I mean, somebody's it'd have to be Edmonton out. But, I mean, when was the last time that something like this happened? And rather than just haves and have-nots in that Central Division, which always seemed like the case, now you've got people taking points from each other left and right.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. I mean, the Northeast was that strong for a while. There'd be four teams would go from the Northeast.
The Northwest was that way for a while. I mean,
and the Northwest, yeah, exactly. The Northwest was like that for a couple of years. So, yeah, and you couldn't handicap those games because those teams know each other so well that if they meet each other in the playoffs, record doesn't mean anything.
No,
because the teams know each other really well, and those teams, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how bad Ottawa is. Ottawa's got Buffalo's number, for example, or, you know, for years, you know, we had Toronto's number. No matter how good, bad they were, we were, and how bad they and how good they were. I mean, it's just the way it is. And it's you know, Nashville could always go into Detroit and beat Detroit. Mm-hmm. Under Barry Trotz, they have a winning record in Detroit.
That's just crazy.
it is crazy, but it's the way it is. So they play each other enough. They know their systems. They know what you know. They know the players really well, and that's always the good, intriguing subplot in an interdivision. Like 4-5 matchup or something like that.
Yeah.
So,
well, and now long term contracts, they're going to know each other even more. So,
exactly. You know, which in a way is a good thing. That brings that whole, you know, snarl back to the whole process.
Yeah. And, you know, let me just say right now, we only have like 10 games left in the season, which just seems absolutely insane. It just seems like it's so fast that it's ending. Maybe it's the podcast. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But,
no, it's that we're getting older now, James, and time accelerates.
Oh, is that what it is? That must be it. I am feeling older. I played today, and my back's still feeling it. I got to say, I like this year's schedule a lot better than I liked the last couple. You know, to be able to see a little more of each conference playing each other. You know, it was nice. It was a good. I think it was a good schedule this year. A lot better than the last couple seasons.
I don't really have an opinion one way or the other on the schedule. I didn't mind it the one way. I don't mind it this way. I really just don't have an opinion on it. But you know, if more people like it, great.
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion on it.
Hey, I wanted to bring up Ryan Kesler from the Vancouver Canucks.
Right.
Complete opposite side of the world from where you live. Ryan Kesler had a quote the other day about people taking a pay cut to stay in Vancouver. Of course, the Sedin twins are coming up for contract mm-hmm. extensions, and that's right. a big deal, of course. Where will they go? And they've broken off talks, of course, until the end of until they're out of the playoffs because they don't want the distraction, which, of course, is also a very good bargaining technique.
It's also a distraction in and of itself. Oh,
yeah, exactly. It's like you want to. It's all a distraction at this point. But Kessler said the other had this quote the other day that that's what we need everybody to do. If we're going to win the cup, we need guys to take pay cuts. The way the salary cap is now, you can't you really can't get what you're worth now if you want to win. Everybody in this locker room knows that, and for us to be a great team going forward, we're going to have to take a pay cut. And immediately, his agent turned around and said that there would be that he wouldn't be taking a hometown discount. And I just read that quote to you. Now here's the quote from his agent. This is I love this. I think that was completely taken out of context. am I missing something here?
What part of they need to take a pay cut?
Yeah.
Does he not understand?
I think
there was no comma there. There was no subordinate clause coming afterwards. It was a period.
Yeah, maybe what his maybe the context that was taken out of was the fact that we need guys to take pay cuts rather than I'm going to take a pay cut. Maybe.
Ooh, well, yeah, there
maybe
is that.
That's the context. But what a joke! I love that. But this is the part that got me thinking a little bit. His agent said he's got a lot more potential. He's got a lot more to fulfill and a lot more responsibilities. So don't expect anything less from me than market value. Didn't say fair.
Well,
market value.
You got to remember that.
Market
that's
value.
How the agent...
I mean, yeah, that's true. But market value is coming down in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and Ryan Kessler was overpaid by Bobby Clark a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. The agent has to say that because that's how he gets paid.
Yeah.
It's actually impressive for Kessler to say something like that, given the NHLPA's stated, brotherly solidarity and all of that in order to try and raise salaries as high as possible for the top end players, mm-hmm. Or even the mid tier players. And it's just the way it is. And, I guess Vancouver, but Vancouver's a good market, so I don't see why the NHLPA would have a problem with guys staying in Vancouver, even to quote unquote take the hometown discount. Not that there ever really is much of one. Don't let anybody kid you.
Yeah,
there never really is. There, the only hometown discount exists in the minds of writers, beat writers who work that particular circuit.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And the fans that want their hometown favorite back. I mean, if you want to see the perfect example, Ryan Smith crying on his way out of Edmonton, and he
over $100,000 bucks,
pretty much
over $100,000, which, given the exchange rate change in the Canadian dollar that season,
mm-hmm.
he would have been better off staying in Edmonton by about $500,000.
Yeah.
So, cry me a freaking river.
Exactly.
I've never been able to look at Ryan Smith since that press conference and think anything other than somebody run his sorry ass through the boards. Seriously, I'm like, you pussy. There is no crying in hockey. I'm sorry. Quoting Tom Hanks, there ain't no crying in hockey.
Well, I have. Well, there would be some people that would dispute that with you. Didn't Wayne Gretzky cry when he left Edmonton?
He might have. but he didn't have a choice in the matter.
No.
He was sold.
Yeah.
No. Ryan Smith had every opportunity to stay in Edmonton and then decided to, lose his mind because he made the wrong decision. I'm like, well, you could have gone back and re-signed with them.
Yeah, true. And where the Oilers are in the playoff hunt and the Avalanche are not.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Tom, I think that about sums up the week. What about you?
We both of us are just having that whole being bad hockey fans, considering that both of our teams are just sucking.
Yeah, the dive for top five is on for my team.
it's painful watching the Sabres fold under pressure. It really is. And, it is what it is. And Bergeier better be making a list and checking it twice as to what he's going to do at the draft and in the offseason.
Yeah.
So. If they win out, they make the playoffs. But so,
nope. I don't. I don't see it happening.
I don't either.
Word is Ryan Miller may be coming back soon, but I think it's going to be for that final lap.
It may be. It's like everything else. You can't lose three really big games in a row. And not even get a point out of one of them. I mean, even if they had gotten a pity point out of, you know, two of the three games last week, you know, they'd be 3 points back from Florida and Montreal at this point, and that's certainly within striking distance. You know, we're talking about Dallas being in striking distance right now, 3 points back. But, you know, I would say with 3 points back with 10 games to go, then at least you wouldn't have to win every game. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. I sincerely doubt it, though. The thing that bothers me is the watching the penalty kill fall apart, because that's where it's hurt them. Oh, well.
That 10 games left. We'll see what happens.
Yep. All right, James.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
We'll talk to you next week, man.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. If I sounded a little weird on this episode, that's because I was recording in the front seat of a 2006 Ford Escape. There is no better place to record a podcast. You can find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find out about us being on Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, iTunes. Go to the website to find out how to subscribe in iTunes. It'll make your life easier. You can always email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us on the phone. The number is 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks a lot for listening again to The Rink.